The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
It would be a Wolves fan, eh?
On goes Paul. People might yet win it here for Wolves. Flaps in the shot. What a goal!
Hello and welcome to today's episode of Wolves Fancast, part of the 90 Min Network. It's going to be one of those shows, ladies and gentlemen. Wolves did, of course, lose 4-2 to Leeds even. It's been a long one. There is so much to talk about, let alone the six goals. There were two red cards. There were VAR decisions. It basically had everything in a game. Joining me tonight to talk about the game, I've got Jaffo and Andy. I mean, I was going to say I don't quite know where to start, because we were chatting just before we jumped on here about there's a couple of overarching things about this team and about this game, which I don't want to kind of lose within it, because there were so many individual hot points within it. Whether that was on the Wolves side, the Leeds side, or the refereeing side of things as well. So we'll kind of try and cover it all. One thing I am glad about, I don't know about you guys, is the fact that we weren't recording this yesterday.
The group chat was something else last night, wasn't it?
Yes.
It was heated, shall we say.
I'm not going to lie. I had it on mute. I turned it off. I don't want to look at it. I don't want to listen to it.
I'm sure most fans had similar reactions to us afterwards. And hopefully in the cold light of day, it's, made some of it easier to digest. But frankly, I'm still really annoyed by all of it yesterday. Let alone the refereeing for Wolves' performance as a whole. But we'll talk starting 11, because again, he's done a bit more tinkering, hasn't he, Lopetegui? Xhau Gomez gets his first full start, and he goes with Neto, Jimenez, and Podence up front. We talked the other day, Jaffo, about how when Jimenez is playing, having those two forwards, two wide players, doesn't really work for him. I mean, were you a bit concerned when you saw the lineup?
Yeah, and for that exact reason. I mean, we saw it throughout the game. I mean, we talk about it more as we go through it, but we saw exactly through the game is like when you have a striker who I can't remember the last time he scored a header, who's been isolated by two centre backs, because you've got Podence and Neto there, and they're the type of players who want to cut back inside to try and whip a ball in or work the ball back through the middle. Then how the hell are we going to get value out of a player like Jimenez? We just can't. And okay, yeah, he hasn't been the same player for the past 3 years. I think it's around about 3 years anniversary, isn't it? But
yeah,
it will be. But it's like, How do you get the most of a player, and you play to someone's strengths? And we spoke about this. We speak about this like probably like once every two or three shows. The same thing gets brought up. If it's not about the same player, but it's like, how do we get strength? How do we play to our strengths? Players like Adama Traore, who we'll talk about as well later, we play to their strengths. We get the most value out of them. So how do we get value out of Jimenez? You put him where people can actually put a ball onto his head. And that's not what we saw yesterday. And seeing that starting 11, I was under no impression that we were going to get anything out of that game.
And also for me with Jimenez, put players around him. For me, like, he does his best work all throughout his career between the goalposts. But and there was a couple of points in yesterday's game where he got the ball, and it was like one of almost those classics where he got played into his feet really quickly, and there's that opportunity for him to sort of knock the ball around the corner, and just no one's making that run. And whether it's from centre midfield, whether it's from the wingers, and I mean, I'm digging into my graphics early on this one, but for those who are watching on YouTube, big thanks and welcome. You'll see on the screen, like, Jimenez is... the formation actually looks like the formation to a degree, in terms of kind of how players are positioned. But Jimenez, there's none kind of really near Jimenez, whereas you compare it to like Leeds and Patrick Bamford and Leeds as number seven, it's all very congested, and for me implies that they're getting players in and around him, and that front three, it just looks isolated. And I think I tweeted before the game, like, the back four pretty much picks itself. The midfield picks itself to a degree. It's kind of Lamina, Neves, and one other. Now, I thought it was going to be Nunes or Moutinho. Turned out to be Gomez. Great. We'll talk about him in a bit, because I think there's bits to pick up on that. But there just isn't three forward players who there is any chemistry.
It's not at all, Issa. I think Jimenez has lost some of his mobility. I think that is partly down to his age, partly down to his, obviously, the horrific injury which he nearly died of. We absolutely can't take that away from him. We understand that. But at the same time, if you're just going to say, right, we'll stick him there, we'll have this mercurial talent in Pedence who does whatever the fuck he wants, whenever the fuck he wants, and we'll have Neto who is not the player he was. So that front three immediately, I thought that just looks disjointed. And plus, I always find that Pedence and Neto, they're too one-footed. Neto's too left-footed and Pedence is too right-footed. I don't mind an inverted winger if they have the opportunity to go on the outside. But Neto never does that, and Pedence rarely does that. And when he does, he tends to go out for a goal kick. Like, he's not that good with his left foot. He does occasionally try it. But all that adds up to an absolute disaster up front, which is pretty much what we've been seeing for 2.5 years at this point.
I mean, it's gobsmackingly shocking to a point, isn't it, when you can't consider it. And we didn't get off to a good start, rather obviously, because we conceded inside 6 minutes. I guess out of weirdly all the goals, I almost kind of overlooked it because of everything that happened in, you know, the 90 plus minutes afterwards. But you must think, if you're in opposition playing Wolves, considering literally everything we just said, that we can barely score, you must be licking your fucking lips if you score inside the first 10 minutes. Because we're a team who just, we've got such a low scoring record. I'm almost surprised more teams don't just go full pelt at us and try and get a goal early on, because, well, frankly, we're not good enough to continually break a team down.
Mm. That's exactly what Leeds did. They saw that our right-hand side was fairly weak because Neto is not going to be tracking back and putting in a shift there. Semedo generally feels his way into a game. He has improved, but he's also, I don't say liability, but I think he's possibly the weaker link when it comes to the overall team. And they obviously identified that. So they tried that ball over to Nyonto 4 times before it eventually came off and they scored a goal. They identified it early and they just kept hammering it at us. And we never reacted to that. I mean, we could easily have been, you know, a goal behind within the first 2, 3, 4 minutes. It's only really their lack of finishing that made them wait an extra 2 minutes to the six. Which is a terrible thing to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it kind of felt like after that, Wolves did kind of snap into gear. And for genuinely like the next half an hour, Leeds barely got near us. And I don't know, it was kind of fascinating to see, because we kind of just kept piling on momentum, creating chances, but not huge chances. And making, I guess, sloppy decisions as well. Like, I've seen it doing rounds on social media where Podence tries to the overhead kick. I think it's Podence.
Yeah.
instead of, you know, knocking it back across the face of goal where there's two Wolves players waiting. And I guess if anything sums up Wolves, it's probably that at the moment. One thing that I guess was apparent in the first half was the pitch conditions. Now, it was a feisty-ass game. Let's be honest, it was a brawl of a game. We're kind of, the refereeing is almost like this thread throughout the game. But there was a couple of key things in the first half. One, while we're having that high point in momentum, was the potential Semedo penalty. At the time, what was your initial reaction to it?
I thought it was at the time, but obviously I'm in the South Bank. I'm a lot further away than a lot of people, but it looked like there was contact the way he went down. But it's very, very difficult to really judge how much contact there actually was. But yeah, in the moment, I did think it was a penalty.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be lying if I didn't think it was. I mean, I'm very, in the moment, very gold-tinted glasses person. But it's one of those. You come across him and it looked like maybe it's one of them. He kind of catches him afterwards. But, I mean, you look back at it and you're like, we have this conversation again. We have this conversation all the time about VAR, and it's supposed to clear things up. Because I like to see things in zeros and ones, right? And there has to be absolutes, and there's with refereeing, there just doesn't seem to be any absolutes. And the one thing that really frustrates me about this is that they're looking at these issues and Howard Webb's now involved, and they're changing things on a weekly basis. We're not talking about Sunday League football. We're talking about a £100 million game or whatever they call it now for the playoff game to get into the Premier League.
Yeah,
you know, we're talking about a multi-million pound industry, and they're changing things on the fly. And this is like March. This isn't August. This isn't September. How the hell can you come in and say, okay, well, we're going to do this slightly differently now? You have all this time to prepare all these things, prepare all these ideas and how they're going to do things. You do that for a season. And then if you need to change something, you change it then. You don't change it in March. I don't understand what Howard Webb is thinking by saying, okay, now we want the referees to do it a different way when there's 10 games left in the season or 15 or whatever. It makes zero sense, because that now has an effect, and everything that's happened before has happened, and that has an effect from this point now on all these teams. Yeah. Now, if we were to get relegated at this point because of the changes and because of everything that's happened, say the Lamina red card, some of the bullshit decisions that happened, Alan Liverpool, I know it was the FA Cup, but like that yesterday, if we get relegated because of that, you know, I would feel egregious that the PGOMOL changes it on the fly. I would be so pissed off because there's no consistency. And that's what I just wish we had with it. I just wish we had some level of consistency and accountability on what they do, because they just seem to hide behind bullshit.
It seems almost smoke and mirrors, and even like the things like that came out post Newcastle, where the PGOMOL issued an apology, but it wasn't an apology. And it wasn't saying that they made a mistake. It was the fact that a better decision could have been made. And it's just, I can't get my head around it. And there are a few things for me, and I think we might even have it, we might have popped up on Twitter corner potentially around, you know, how do you make it better? And there's just some really basic things. And one of the things that struck me about all of these controversial, quote-unquote, decisions around Wolves, that, you know, whether it's the Gomez, whether it's Toto Gomez versus Liverpool, whether it's the one against Arsenal, Lamina to a degree, Newcastle, you know, but whatever in there, and Semedo as well, we'll go for. Pretty much each one of them, I can understand to a degree why the officials have made that decision in the moment. I understand it. But just because of how VAR is implemented, how the referee has to act in terms of, oh, well, if it's a ruled as a clear and obvious error and things like that, each one of them, because of the direction of the referee, has then impeded it. So actually, I think, like the Semedo one, to drag it back to today's game, or yesterday's game even, if he blows for a penalty, that doesn't get overturned by VAR. Is the easiest way I can describe it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Same as Jimenez against Newcastle. And that's the thing that I find so frustrating. And, you know, we can talk... Even the fact he didn't, you know, it got reviewed by VAR, but he then doesn't go to the TV to watch it. And I can't work out if that's a good or a bad thing. How that's kind of done is almost like if they go to the TV, it means there's going to be a change in the decision making process, and it just screams to me that just something very obviously needs to change in the summer about the communication, the clarity, as you said, the accountability of it, because it just doesn't work for the current model. You know, I've got the Newcastle one. I'm dragging it back to a game that happened a week ago now. Ball spoke really quickly. The ref ended up being 50 yards from the decision. Now, it's not his fault. That's you know, how fast the play progressed. But to not just pause on it and go, you know what? I couldn't have a full clear picture of it. I'm really fucking lucky. I can go and look at it. Can you imagine just going, actually, you know what? Instead of me making a decision in the moment, I can review these cameras.
We give them all of the benefits in the world and they don't embrace them.
And I don't, it's almost like they kind of use it as almost this antithesis to what they are doing. And all it does is promote more mistrust, more disharmony with match officials. And then, you know, Andy, I know you've had beef with refereeing Twitter this season.
And,
and all it does is it exacerbates that, because then it just makes everyone's lives harder. So Wolves don't get the decision. And it kind of snowballs and the game gets feistier. Now, one thing I kind of made note of was I don't think the pitch helped, because you had Craig Dawson getting a booking, which I think some Leeds fans would argue could have been a red. I think the one on Lamina by their defender was a heavy ass challenge as well. And I mean the Dawson one, it was almost like, I think Harrison slipped and then Dawson slipped into him with the slide tackle, and it's kind of just like, yeah, it's very clear yellow. I'm trying to work out if I think Dawson should have been sent off or not before half time.
I think what saves Dawson, because I think he could have got a red card, a straight red on the challenge on Harrison. I think what saves him, his foot wasn't high, and as you say, it was a slippery pitch. So I can see why, in VAR speak, it's not a wrong outcome to have booked him. So I don't think that VAR would have intervened and sent him off. But at the same time, I think if the ref had have, don't think we could have argued too much. I don't think it's a second booking, because if you look, Bamford has got his arms behind him. He's got his arms all tangled in with Dawson. It was very 50-50. And often in those kind of challenges, whoever's the first one to hit the ground is the one who's going to get the free kick. And I think that's what happened, to be perfectly honest. I don't think there was really anything in it. It was barely a foul, but because Bamford was the first one down, okay, that's generally how it goes.
Yeah, I think the only thing, you've got the idea that it's closer to goal, which I'm not a big fan of, because I think if you just have a halfway line, to be honest, I think the fact that Bamford's got completely the side, and they are just tangled up, so you say it doesn't kind of matter, was, yeah, frustrating. But we go at 1-0 at half time, and Lopetegui turns into a tinker man again and makes the changes, and we see Dawson come off, which I guess he was worried about getting that booking. I don't know how many bookings Dawson's actually on for the season now, because he does pick up quite a few, but at half time, Sarabia comes on, Collins comes on, and I think, oh, it's a brave new dawn. Personally, I think we're crying out for Sarabia because he is much more of a player who likes to play a bit more inside, as opposed to Neto, who seems to be very much on going to stay out wide at the moment. And my optimism lasted for 4 minutes. And I mean, I've watched it. I have dared watching back that second goal because, I don't know, as Paul in the YouTube comments says, you know, take Dawson off and concede off a set piece. Great decision. Now I'm trying to work out how much correlation causation is with that because I don't know Dawson prevents Gomez not tracking his runner. I think Tom Calvert on the show repeats pretty much every time we concede a set piece how woeful we are at matching up size to size. And the fact that you've got João Gomez on, you know, 6'1", 6'2", Luke Ayling, who, again, very clever set piece move because you've got Saar doesn't do enough and gets blocked off. Kilman doesn't really attack the ball as well. Mm. You lose your man in the middle. And again, it's a minor gripe. No one defending the back post. There's just no one. So when as soon as Saar's in no man's land, Luke Ayling has the freedom of the Wolves' goal. I mean, it's Sunday League shit, isn't it?
I find that's often a problem when you mix and match your defensive style. Like either go all man for man or go all zonal. But it looked like we were trying to do a bit of a hybrid of both. And I think sometimes you end up treading on other people's toes. And that's what it looked like a little bit. And a plus because I think you are right. I don't think Dawson would necessarily have prevented it. But he's a bit more vocal about telling people where to be. I think we possibly could have set up a little better.
Yeah.
But still there, isn't
it? I mean, it was a fantastic... I think if you look at it from the Leeds perspective, they say it's a fantastic delivery, something that we're not necessarily accustomed to as Wolves fans. And it's training ground stuff, isn't it? In terms of, you know, they flooded everyone near post, had a couple of blocks go their way, had someone spin off the back. Perfect. You know me, I am an absolute pedant for a good training ground goal. But, and you know, again, Paul, who mentioned it in the comments as well, you know, Dawson would have told every player to watch your man. Of course, it prevents Gomez switching off. With the greatest of respect, if we're relying on one person to tell everyone else to do your job, I find that deeply, I do struggle with that. And I get that Dawson is this very experienced central defender. He is that calming influence and stuff like that. I don't quite buy into, if he's on the pitch, we don't concede that just because of the sheer catalogue of errors that aren't just João Gomez. And it's frustrating because actually, I thought he had quite a good game. I think the game suited him because it was very playground-esque. It was just up and down. There was no structure to it. After the third goal, which we'll talk about in a second, it was just a free-for-all, which I think kind of suited his chaotic style. But I think João Gomez sort of narrowing on him for a second. I do like him. I've got to admit, you know, he does everything you need him to do. He's got that's the tenacity in the tackle. He did that block after you know, making a mistake. And that stood out for me because it could have been really easy for that young man to have gone hiding. And, you know, to front up.
He's exceptional, though, isn't he, for his age? And the fact that he's only been here, what, 6 weeks at the most? You know, he plays like he's born to play in England. And he's exceptional talent. We're very lucky to have somebody like that. Normally they get snapped up by a lot bigger clubs than us. But the one thing that frustrates me about him now, and I think a lot of our midfielders, is there's no balance. So we're playing with essentially what is, if you know, for the YouTube viewers, when Rich put the positions up earlier, is we're playing with this single pivot because Lamina's dropping in between the centre-backs. You can see where number five is picking up. So Joe Gomez and Ruben Neves essentially have to be box-to-box midfielders, and that doesn't really work too much for us because I just don't see any value in Ruben Neves being, and I've seen it a lot in the last probably sort of two or three games, where he's closing down the goalkeeper, and he doesn't have that ability to be that sort of like box-to-box midfielder, someone who's filling the space and supporting this striker. And Joe Gomez is the same. He's not that sort of player. And I just feel like where we'd get the most out of these players is to play a little bit more structured and to say have a double pivot. So we have Neves and Lamina, or Lamina and Gomez, or one of them in Nunes, and then have a creative influence in front of them, like a Matias Cunha to play off of Jimenez or Costa, or even bring Pedence back inside. To have some sort of structure and shape, it would be better, because we just don't seem to get value out of the players that we've got. And you can see that when you've got Nunes and Neves on the same pitch, there's no coherence in what they're doing. And I think that's a lot of people were annoyed in recent games when Nunes has started, is that because of this lack of balance, they can't work together. And we seem to have this breakdown. And yesterday was this real focus point on it, because, as you said earlier, no one got near Jimenez. So when we're sort of like playing with the players that we are and we're slowing the play down from the wings, no one's getting into the box to support. So you've got two very, very talented midfielders doing jobs that they shouldn't be doing. And it's sort of this square pegs in round holes thing again with Wolves. And I don't know why we do it, because we have a load of really, really good attacking players. You know, Sarabia could play in the middle. Cunha could play off the striker. Pedence could play off the striker. We got all these players. Why don't we use them in that role and just play a little bit more structured for where we are? You know, Neves is a very, very, very good player, but he doesn't need to be doing that role. Mm. Our value in him is getting him to start plays. And that's when we saw in the second half, and we'll talk about it in a little bit more detail later, but the value from him was starting attacks and getting the ball moving quickly. And that's what we're not getting it if he's charging and wasting all of his energy doing 40-yard runs at a goalkeeper to close him down.
Yeah. And it's difficult because, you know, people in the comms, friend of the fan cast, Ed Marshall, says, you know, it almost feels like he's trying too hard and he's having to feel like he's having to do it all. And they get it because, you know, we've always got these two comments back to back and it's bang on. He's trying to almost be Brian Robson, be Captain Marvel, because no one's doing the work in front of him, chiefly because other players can't, in terms of like Jimenez, to be that press. So he's having to drive that energy forward, but then you miss him out in the areas that he excels at. Now, I personally think Neves could be a box-to-box midfielder. Do I think it's his best position? No. Mm-hmm. He's having to do it because who the fuck else is? It's how it feels like.
Yeah.
And it must be so challenging for me. I like seeing Neves go further forward, because I want to see your best players on the ball as much as possible and in those attacking positions and influencing play. But I'm in agreement, and you know, we've got a little bit of a break now in terms of fixtures. So we don't have a game for 2 weeks, but this team is crying out for 4-2-3-1. I know that there's politics at play around Matheus Nunes, for example, but just go for a two-man base of Lamina and Neves, and you know, have your back, you know, have Cunha, Sarabia, and one of the probably Huang behind Jimenez.
Mm-hmm.
And I that's hopefully just gives that full link and gives the support for the front players, because it just feels like, however you can't look at it, for that midfield and attack of those, I complete lost count of the amount of players, six players, there is just no formation or tactic that can suit six Wolves players in those positions. It's like this weird Venn diagram where we just can't get it to match up to get that central bit that, you know, you can't have this front three working together. You can't have this midfield three working together. Because you're right, there just isn't balance. And that's not to say that Neves, Mateus, Moutinho, you know, Lamina, João Gomes aren't all really good players. But, you know, it's just no, it just doesn't work. It just simply doesn't work. And it almost felt like the cherry on the cake when Leeds scored a third goal with a man who scored within 10 to 20 seconds coming off the bench and scoring with his first touch. To the point I frankly didn't even register on it when it came to for Fancast Twitter, because I'd almost given up at that point. And by the time I'd almost calmed down, Wolves had pulled one back through what I think will go down as quietly one of the best goals Wolves have ever scored that will get forgotten about.
It absolutely will, won't it? Like, that will be on your end of season review of, you know, best goals, and then you'll never remember it. And partly because it was in a terrible match, and partly because it was Johnny.
Yeah. I was going to say, what's the opposite of a shit sandwich? Because he was at fault for a third goal, which I've literally just passed on mentally, just because we've still got what, how long left of the game? About half an hour left of the game. I still need to cover it. Yeah, if they scored in like the 62nd minute and we scored in the 65th. So it was bad. And then, yeah, so he was at fault for the goal. Sound. Made up for it with, again, what was just a nonchalantly great volley. Like, when you put it out, scored a volley from 40 yards. Yeah, I get it. But even though it's an empty net or whatever, it's still a decent finish, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I always like a goal as well that bounces before it crosses the line. I don't know what it is, but there's just something about that visual where the keeper's, it's almost like the keeper's so close, but just not close enough that it gets to bounce before it hits the back of the net. I love that.
I must say, from a far out goal, I'm a big fan of almost, I like it when it does the bounce, it always feels comical. I like it when it's scored from long range and it doesn't hit and it doesn't bounce, and it almost just feels like a, you know, slamming down of the piano case. I'm thinking of Dejan Stankovic for Inter Milan, where, yeah, you know, Neuer comes bursting out,
flying out,
and he just goes, nope, you don't do that round here, and just levers it. It just arcs him beautifully. But as Paul kind of rightly says, the YouTube comments are amazing on this. I almost have more fun with this sometimes. Like, yeah, it was a great goal, but no one cared about it.
Paul's right. Paul is spot on.
I didn't celebrate either.
No, I gave it a golf round of applause. Like, it was nothing more.
You know what? 8 minutes later, when Mateus Kühne, a forward player, scored for Wolves, I did start to believe, I'm not going to lie. I thought, I've watched so many football matches. Leeds aren't an amazing football side. We're terrible as well, don't get me wrong. But I thought, you know what? This is the turning point. And I talked myself up into it. And maybe you say, Max Kilman turning into the best, you know, what a ball in from him.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought he played quite well, actually. I think he was, you know, the pick of our players was Kilman at times, to be honest. Not that anyone was really good, but, you know, he was mediocre in a team full of shit, to be honest. But yet, like you say, once a striker finally scored a goal after over a year at this point, I did believe that we were going to get back in it, because, like, Leeds might have scored three goals, but they were fucking terrible.
Yeah.
For pretty much most of that game, Leeds were not a good team. We just couldn't defend for shit. So I thought, you know what, we'll get these. We might even nick a winner. But then obviously everything fell to pieces a few seconds after we got back into the game.
Yeah, well, I think the big catalyst after that, in terms of why we didn't go on to do something else in the game, wasn't actually the Johnny Red card. I think it's actually preventing a two-match suspension for Ruben Neves. Because I think that's why he takes off Ruben Neves with 15 minutes to go, because politely, why the hell would you take off Ruben Neves? For kind of any reason, because he wasn't playing awfully. But he has got this two-game suspension looming over, and I think he's got until, I want to say Chelsea, until he kind of gets away from it. And as soon as that happened, and don't get me wrong, Moutinho coming on with 15 minutes to go, any football match at this point of his career, I think that's kind of like the perfect move for him at this point. But as Ben said in the comments, you know, apparently he had a knock, so he was protecting him.
Okay.
So fair enough at the time. I still stand by it that game, considering how tetchy it was, and before he got sent off, I think there was one, two, three, four, five. There'd already been six yellow cards by the 75th minute as well. And let's be honest, he's a good one to have as a banker for your yellows, Ruben.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
But anyway, as soon as that happened, I thought it was going to be a struggle. The momentum did slow down after that change. I don't know whether it's Leeds took an extra back step on it as well. But then Johnny chases down a bad touch, initially gets a yellow, gets reviewed by VAR, goes to red. Now, I know they talked about potentially appealing it. I personally think it wasn't red, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think they've now come out and said they won't be appealing the Johnny, but they will be appealing the Nunes one, which I think makes sense because...
Yeah,
it was a red card. At the time, I didn't think it was. I thought maybe he's just overrun it. But when you look back, you're like, actually, no, you absolutely can't defend that. He's nowhere near the ball. His studs are up. It's out of control. It's a red card all day, really, isn't it, that one?
Yeah, and I think that's the nicest way I looked at it. And when you listen to the commentary back, you know, Johnny's not that sort of player. I can't remember off the top of my head, and I feel a bit ignorant now for not checking. I don't remember him ever getting sent off before. I definitely don't remember him getting sent off for, you know, a bad tackle or anything like that. And again, I don't think he's like meaning to stamp on the bloke's leg, and he's not gone over the ball to try and injure him. He's tried to win the ball. He's got nicked away from him. How he's going to win the ball back. And it did feel like the sort of game where it wasn't going to end with 22 players on the pitch anyway. Mm. I was just a bit sort of surprised it was him as much as anyone else.
I almost feel like he was a bit over-enthusiastic. Scoring that goal obviously got to his head, and he had a moment, a senior moment, and then that was it. It was all over for him.
Yeah, I think it's going to cause potential dilemmas at left-back, because I don't quite know when Bueno is going to be back fit. And really doesn't seem to take a fancy to Aitnori.
He said it was tactical, didn't he? Was why Aitnori was left out yesterday. I believe he's the reason he didn't feature. But you are right. He's never his go-to guy, is he? So yeah.
No, he's not kind of nailed down a starting spot. He's essentially they preferred Bueno over him, who's got a lot less experience. I don't know, and even when you say, "Oh well, it's tactical," I can't quite work out what the tactic is, because we had two defenders on the bench who were Toti Gomez and Nathan Collins. Now, if your argument's Johnny gets injured, you're playing Toti Gomez as a left back. I think is it.
Yeah.
Whereas always, you know, because that's what I sort of find interesting to a degree. But anyway, sending off happens, and I think to a degree, I think that kind of killed off Wolves' chances. We've not talked about the, I guess, the other sub as well in terms of Adama Traore, who basically, who played right back, essentially for half an hour and put in a half decent shift, in an orthodox position for him, and then deep into added time. I almost don't know how to describe it because whatever language I use, it won't quite sum it up. But essentially, he gets his shirt pulled and he does the absolute football cliches, cardinal sin number 7, between passing it across your own box and not beating the first man from a corner. He does not play to the whistle. And literally, he stops still and they pinch the ball and, you know, travel 50 up 40 yards at the pitch and score. And chaos ensues, pretty much, isn't it? Now, before we go on to the chaos ensuing aspect, the Traore thing. Now, again, it is brought about a lot in terms of Adama personally and whatever, but what was your, again, initial, break it down.
Well, his performance, before I get to that bit, I think I might have been a bit harsh initially in the group chat when we was talking about him. He's a fucking pain in the arse because he should do better than he does. But he did give us probably the best chance of the game that didn't end in a goal when he did it the one time where he picked the right pass. The right cross was to the near post to Jimenez and it just ended up being a worldy save from Melier. So fine, okay. But then you get that one, but then the other five crosses are either too short, too long, goal kick. He's a nightmare. But for the goal, I don't know if it's a foul, you know? Because right, if it gets given us a foul, VAR wouldn't overturn it, blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, the rules now is the action enough to deem the outcome? He did pull his shirt. He untucked his shirt. That is literally what happened to him. Is that enough to really stop him from doing anything? The ref looks at it. He still stood up on his feet. He can still move quite freely. He chose not to hunt the ball down. He chose to turn and moan at the ref. Mm-hmm. I can absolutely see why he hasn't given that as a free kick. Because if he was fouled so much, he would be on the floor. If he goes to ground, it's a free kick all day.
Yes. Yes.
And that's the problem.
Yes.
Because refs have made a rod for their own backs that only fouls. It's only a foul if you go to the ground, which isn't a thing. That's never been a thing. But that's now the culture they've engendered in football. That's why players dive, because that's the only way you're going to get a free kick.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's one of those, like, if that happened against us and he stopped and was like shouting at the referee and the referee gave it, what we'd say as fans, especially as Wolves fans, we'd say that he's refereeing the game. And that's what Adama tried to do. He tried to referee the game. He tried to say, okay, well, I've been felled. Stop the game. That's it. Instead of actually being a team player. And that's one of the things that I always levy against Adama is his attitude and application as a footballer. He's never good enough. You know, as you rightly say, Rich, play to the motherfucking whistle. I know you didn't quite put it that way, but play to the...
I could have done.
You could have done, but
hang on. Do you want me to just fill it in?
Yeah, go on.
Motherfucking whistle.
Yeah, go on. That's a soundbite right there. Yeah. But it's true. It's like, just keep going until the referee says otherwise, because at the end of the day, we're still in the game at that point. You know, we can still get a point. And then his attitude of saying, oh, I can't be touched. It's so fucking annoying because he's not the only one. You got Pedence does it as well, and Neto. They go down fucking way too easy instead of fighting. We've now gone 4-2 down, game over. Any sort of fight that was there is gone.
And it's so fucking frustrating that people have not got the right attitude as footballers. And how much he wants to be paid this much and that much. He's not even worth half of that if he's not going to fight to be part of that team and to try and win the game for us. Because it's so annoying to see him try and referee a match. Because if it happened on the other side, like I say, we'd be so pissed off about it.
Yeah, I think what it summed up for me, like a microcosm, and we touched on it against Newcastle, is how this group of players don't know how to emotionally respond to situations on the football pitch. And I tried to summarise it with Adama before, because we're talking, a bit of context, we talked about Wilfried Zaha in our Fancast group chat in terms of how he's perceived and things like that and how he reacts to challenges and him being quote-unquote petulant. Now, Adama isn't actually a petulant footballer for a lot of the time. For someone who gets fouled as much as he doesn't lash out. He's never someone who gets a booking for retaliation or anything like that. But you see how when he gets fouled, your fight or flight response. Here's his flight. He doesn't, what he should be doing is rising to it in a way and going, actually, you're fouling me because I'm better than you, because I'm faster than you, and not just getting frustrated that he isn't gaining that momentum or getting that additional space. And I understand why, don't get me wrong, but every time decision goes against Wolves, whether it is justified or unjustified in this case, they don't know how to react in a way that shows resilience and, frankly, sportingness sometimes. And, you know, don't get me wrong, I think it's tricky because you're right. You made a rod for your own back. Adama Traore is a big bloke. Is a little shirt pull going to pull him over? No. Is it going to pull anyone over? Not really. Does it technically impede him? Probably yes. If, as soon as that shirt's pulled, he drops to his knees and lands on the football, it's giving us a free kick. Simple as.
Yeah, every time.
Yeah.
I almost feel with Traore, there's, like, compare Traore to Zaha, for example, who you just mentioned. Zaha's attitude is very much, you fail me, I'm going to make a bit of a show of it, become a bit of a cunt, and then he'll either score or he'll lay one on you. Like, because that's what he does. That graphic that Dan put in the group chat about the players who've committed the most fouls, Zaha's in the top 20 for most committed, but he's also one of the most fouls. He's a shithouse. Yeah. Adama, he'll get fouled. He'll put his hands on his hips and hoof. Mm. Like, that's not enough of a reaction. Even if it's a foul or if it's not, that's not a reaction. Your reaction either needs to be, well, I'll show you why you've done that, and then take the ball back off them and embarrass them. But the reaction he gives is never enough. And it's so frustrating.
I mean, I guess you compare it, Zaha's a great one. Like, even Diogo Jota, when, like, he'd get fouled and his immediate reaction would be just to try and bulldoze the next player. And properly stand up to them. And, you know, it's not just, you know, when you get tackled, you get a foul. And, you know, essentially the culmination of all this uproar is somehow, you know, I don't think many of us noticed that, you know, what he'd done initially. But Matheus Nunes gets sent off despite being on the subs bench. And it was quite an image seeing Diego Costa being the one to be calming the situation down in what can only be described as poacher turned gamekeeper.
Perfect description, that is.
And thank you. But okay, so initially I thought he has said something to the lines, but, you know, frustrating and silly thing to do. Then it fed out that, oh, he's pushed the assistant linesman, I think was the initial thing that broke, which you can't go, okay, well, you can't really do. And then literally in the last, like, 2 hours, I think it is, the actual clip of what the incident was has been leaked, which was essentially the linesman walks into him backwards, not knowing where he was. And again, we have so many cameras. I don't understand how that decision was given.
I wonder. I think it'll depend on the referee's report. If the referee reports that he sent him off for verbal abuse, then we probably won't get it overturned. If he has put he physically attacked the linesman, as fucking ridiculous as that is, if that's the words in it, we'll probably get him back for the next game. I think that's what it'll come down to. But when you look at it in the grand scheme of the game, we've conceded a goal right at the death that was contentious in a game that was on a knife edge. Like, blood is going to be boiling, tempers are going to be high. You can understand it. So, but this all comes down to the fact that the referee didn't referee the game very well.
No, throughout
it. That, I think that is part of the issue with a lot of it. It was like some of the cards he gave just felt quite flippant, and then there was other tackles which felt worse that got away with it. And I don't know, he didn't handle the emotions of the match at all well, which only added to make them even worse.
Yeah, I think us as fans get very, I think we talk about players' emotions, but I think as fans we get very emotional and we can't control ourselves, even when, you know, we know Ilan Meslier was being a complete dick yesterday and wasting all that time. Mm. But, I mean, come on, referee. When it's in the first half, you just got to stamp it out, because the moment you give one player an inch, they will take the whole fucking pitch. Mm. Because you've lost authority as soon as you don't follow. Because it's a rule, and the players know it's a rule. But if you ain't going to follow up on a rule, then they know that they'll have leeway in other areas because you've got no authority, you've got no control.
He spoke to Meslier 10 times yesterday and then booked him in the 102nd minute. Like, what a waste of a booking. You book him, you speak to him once, he does it again, you say, right, this is your last chance. There won't be a third time, I'll tell you. Then you book them. He would have been booked after half an hour if that was the case. But he didn't. So he wasted all that time. And this is why now we're getting FIFA or whoever is saying, we'll get the World Cup added time now. We'll give you proper added time. We should be fucking doing that anyway. Like, that's the point of added time, is to get the match that you've lost from this bullshit that is going on. Yeah. So why do you need to make it a rule?
You look at that. Ridiculous. Even with that added time, there was 2 minutes in the first half. There was, I think, the Leeds player, when he went down, when Harrison had that collision with Dawson, I think he was down for over 2 minutes. I don't know where they get it from. I mean, I don't want to complain, because essentially I wanted to get in, because at that point we needed to reset and refresh. Mm. But, I mean, there's just no sense in it all, because if you lose 2 minutes to say 2 to 3 minutes for that incident, you've got every goal kick was taking 25 seconds, sometimes longer. There's just no sense in it. There's just the refereeing, just like, again, that they'll hide behind it. There's no accountability. And you want them to come out and you want them to talk about it. I want them to say, okay, then we'll interview referees at half time, you know, at full time and stuff like that, because I think that's the only way to push them to the forefront and say, you justify what you've just done. Because every other thing, these managers, these football players, they get fucking put on by the media and they have to go out there. They're legally obligated to go and talk to the media. They have to, because that's the way that the Premier League's set up. How the referees get away with not being able to do that when what they do influences a game just as much as a footballer or a manager, it just baffles my brain. It really does, because, you know, they should justify what they'd given, because there's a reason for it. And I think most fans would be more than happy to at least try and understand what has happened if they give a solid reason. Because at the moment, they just sit behind smoke and mirrors.
That's why I'm a huge advocate for miking up referees. I don't understand it. Where, you know, I think it works well in, you know, rugby, although they're going through a bit of a issue with rules in that game at the moment. But just that ability to be able to kind of clearly explain to a player, you know, why a decision wasn't given or why it was given, I don't know. I just think that's huge. And you cut out a load, you know, you'll have that first 2 weeks and there'll be a lot of yellow cards for dissent sort of thing. They have to learn.
And Mitrovic doesn't get sent off today if the referee communicates.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mitrovic, all he wants to do is to explain to him what's happened. But because he's been a nonchalant little child, because that's all they are. They're overgrown children referees. So they're little toddlers. As soon as you criticize them and all their little stupid, almost like over loving parents on Twitter, these referee support groups, they're like fucking parents at Sunday League football who are shouting abuse at their kids and shouting abuse at everyone else because they're in their own fucking bubble. They're just pathetic.
It's so dogmatic. And, you know, I was trying to work out, like, you know, how do you make it better? You say, do you do interviews at the end of the game? Do you publicise match reports, refereeing match reports? That'd be my thing. And, you know, that is the referees. Because that's referee, as you said, Andy, that's where he kind of explains his decisions. Mm-hmm. But they're not access to anyone. Now, I feel like that would be really difficult, because that puts a hell of a lot of pressure in terms of what you write, because it's going to get examined to a minutiae by, you know, dickheads like us. But in a way, I'd cope if he, you know, for, let's say the Semedo one, because that's like all the trial run. So those are the two kind of, I guess, the two hot point instances. The thing with trial one is he went to VAR and he saw it. And actually, part of me goes, well, we've kind of said, mate, you know what? It wasn't really enough to go down on. And that's all he needs to put is, initially, I didn't think it was a foul. I consulted with Mr. Monts for reasons I have no idea why.
It was David Coote, so it could have been, to be fair.
Yes. that'll do. You know, we reviewed it on VAR. I determined that, in my opinion, there wasn't enough contact for him to go down. And you go, actually, there's nothing really, like, what do you say to that? Because all you go is, yeah, but I think there was. Or what? Or you go down with what about isms. Now,
yeah.
I don't know.
That's the issue, isn't it?
Yeah.
But once it's in black and white from the person who actually makes the decision, it makes it much easier. And like you say, all you can say is, I disagree. You're like, okay, fine, well, we disagree about lots of things, so fine, whatever.
But you got to know.
At least you have an answer.
You got to know what you're disagreeing with, and that's what we don't know now. Is we don't have a base to work from. And at least if we're all fighting against the common goal of actually the referee's done it because of this, and okay, everyone disagrees and everyone says okay, he's got it wrong, then at least we're all fighting in the right direction. Because at the moment it's a scattergun approach, because it's bullshit baffles brains, because they're just making a decision. Okay, and we're going, okay, maybe it's this, maybe it's this, maybe it's this. So we're not all pushing in the right direction, and they can then feed off that chaos and say, okay, well, we don't need to, because, you know, we're the governing body. We're in control. We can do it.
It's
frustrating.
Genuinely, I don't actually like to talk about refereeing decisions.
Yeah, I don't think anyone does. Everyone just wants to focus on football and enjoy fantastic moments that will be forgotten. A la Johnny.
Yeah, pretty much. And you know, it feels like obviously week in, week out. And Wolves have gone through a spate the last six, you know, since December, isn't it really? Since that Arsenal match where we've had a number on a regular basis. And part of me just go, they're leaving itself out across the season. And it's frustrating because I think, let's say, for all of them, I think if a referee gives it, they don't get overturned. And let's say, that for me is at the very heart of it, for me. And I do think, to a degree, we've had a comment on YouTube, and I think I tweeted it about the Nunes one. I think because of how Wolves players do react to situations, Christopher Rogers says, do you think there's a level of subconscious exists with referees concerned with getting a reputation of moaning and it's not giving us anything because we've been chatting back? I kind of buy into that to a degree because of how we do kind of respond sometimes, but either way, it's hella frustrating because, you know, Leeds are right down there with us. They've done the 6 points, you know, they've got the 6 points against us this season. They've beaten us on the 18th of March for 2 years in a row now, which is a lovely start. And with several players, with, I think it was Johnny, Rodrigo and Ayling, I want to say, or Harrison. So scoring in the same fixture twice. I mean, in terms of the league table, now, according to Opta, we're down to having a 16% chance of getting relegated. 28 games played now, 27 points. How are we all kind of feeling? Because we had a couple of games recently, Bournemouth and today, against relegation-threatened teams, defeats against both of them at home. Two big red flags. I mean, as the international, basically, do you think the international break's come at a very good time for us?
I think it's a reset point. I think the one thing that has come out of the last two or three games is Lopetegui doesn't really know his strongest team. Now everyone's fit, bar Wang not being around and Boubacar Traoré. But it's that. It's he needs to know who's going to get the best out of it, and there needs to be consistency. But I mean, I don't fear relegation at the moment because we're in a good position. You know, since the World Cup, you know, we were stone last. We were adrift a little bit, and now we're 3 points ahead of most teams. So we're in a good position. You know, we can only focus on ourselves, and I think that's one thing that is good, is that if you're in a position where you only need to focus on your own results, I think there's a less pressure. And I know that sounds kind of simple, but having to not worry about other people's results is a nice problem to have, because you're still going to win, but at least you've only got to worry about what's in front of you and not what's going on at, say, Leeds versus Leicester or something like that. So, I mean, I'm still in the camp of I think we'll stay up. I trust Lopetegui, but we need to get that consistency and get that consistency back.
What I think's interesting on that graphic is West Ham, who are in 18th in the relegation zone, their percent chance of going down is actually less than ours.
Yes, I'm assuming it's just because there's a couple of games. It must be the two games in hand they have on
it's
us.
It's got to be, hasn't it? And Leicester as well in 17th.
I do find that interesting.
I mean, I do think that we should stay up. However, I would have said exactly the same thing when we had Dean Saunders then come in and fuck things up massively. Like, there is enough there to get us over the line. The worry is very much that we have lost against teams that we should be getting results against, and we are two matches off bottom of the league. Like, Southampton could catch us in two matches' time, effectively.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not cut and dry by any stretch of the imagination. But I do think we've got the players. I do think we've got the manager. I think this break has come at the right time. We've had a couple of really good results against like Liverpool at home and against Spurs at home. Two good teams who have been in different form, which, you know, I mean, but at the end of the day, that is still Liverpool and Spurs that you've got results against. So that certainly helps. So they know that they can do it. I think now is the time that they need to sort of settle on a team to go forward, because the chopping and changing isn't helping anybody. There's too much inconsistency. How are you going to know what you're supposed to be doing week in, week out, when it might be you, it might be Huang, it might be Trey, or it might be any fucker who decides to play that position that particular week? Yeah. Just need that bit of consistency now, and just sort of back your players. Don't just chop and change them on a whim, because at times it is feeling a little bit like that. Like, I didn't quite understand why he bought Gomez in yesterday, as well as he did, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I don't know why he was bought in. It just seems a little bit flippant almost. And it's great that he recognises that the team he's put out has created an issue, and then he's able to try and rectify the issue. But how about starting and putting your game plan down and causing them the issues, not reacting to the issues they're causing you.
Yeah.
Yes, I think
that's become a bit of a problem.
There has been a slight perception shift, hasn't there? And I think that's why I've been half saying you've been tinkering. more of this episode because it's gone from being, you know, tactically astute to identifying the problem to you're not starting games off correctly then, because we're constantly making these half-time changes and early changes. And you could even argue, you know, if he doesn't sub off Neves at 75th minute and we still got that extra sub to play with, when Johnny gets sent off, we can bring on Toti Gomez and have a natural back three and go for a 3-4-2 formation. Or, do you know what I mean? Like, but because he's made those changes early on, because it wasn't working, and you can argue all day about, you know, he takes Dawson off at half time because he's on a booking, and that's not Lopetegui's not judging the first half correctly. That's a player's that's an impact from a player and things like that. But it does just quite feel like it. You know, we've talked about there's no chemistry. It's almost like he's every week just still trying to find that magic formula. It almost feels like, well, it gets to halftime, I've just give everyone a rocket up their ass and hope that the change at halftime sparks some level of inspiration. But for me, it's all about starting Kuna.
You see,
I think it's something like when he starts with school goal, they've like 41 minutes or something silly. There's stat padding, don't get me wrong with him there, but there is, I think it's 41. I might have just made up a stat there, guys. But the level of output we get when he is on the pitch is huge.
Yeah, and, I mean, he doesn't look like he's going to get you the goals, but his movement and his actual creativity, his link-up play, he manages to create chances for other players. And if that's his role going forward, fantastic. If he ends the season on one goal from yesterday, but we stay up and he's created a dozen goals, brilliant, I'm all for it.
You know, like, if he, you know, same as, let's say, Podence, if, like, he splits opinion for fan base, but actually, no, if he chips in three more goals, and it's because of someone like Kuna being in the side, so it's allowing him to pick up better positions, I'm all in. But at the moment, it feels still very up and down, as it were. And, you know, when you look at fixtures remaining of some of the other teams in and around us, I mean, it's really tricky because there is still a decent amount of, you know, still 10 games left to play for the majority of teams. Well, for us at least, there is, you know, 11 to 12, I guess, as well for some others. It's tricky. It is worrying, but I kind of look at, you know, our last three games and Man United, Everton, Arsenal, but Forest have got Chelsea, Arsenal, Crystal Palace. So that's a tasty old run within itself. Leeds have got Newcastle, West Ham, Spurs. You know, Everton have got City, us, and Bournemouth. So I don't know, but there's a lot of football still to be played, and I think what I kind of identified is there's still a lot of teams around us who still need to play each other, as much as, you know, we've got a few games left with those ones as well.
Yeah. Our destiny is in our own hands, which, as Jaffo pointed out earlier, that's the best position to be in, really, isn't it? Let's be honest. We're in control of it, and I'm sure there'll be plenty more ups and downs in the next 10 games, to be fair.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Couple of questions from Twitter Corner. We'll go through a couple of these. I've already talked about Johnny to a bit. We've talked about relegation fears. So big thanks to those questions that came in. Even Brad asked, do you think VAR would benefit from either a couple of things you see in NFL, either refs being mic'd up, we've talked about that already, and or the introduction of coaches' challenge options as well, which again I think might be interesting. But what I want to pick up, hopefully it's a bit more of a lighthearted note, is the, which football phrases do you rationally find annoying? Mine is, I think there's a player in there when describing a footballer. And that's from Martin.
Game of two halves.
Like that sort of stuff as well. Because certain individuals on Twitter tweeting about them and tweeting compilation videos, shall we say, about certain phrases such as he's like a Rolls Royce and stuff like that.
What's the account? Brian's gun.
Yeah, and I'm just so hyper aware of it now. Well, I was walking back from the game yesterday and I was just listening to what people were saying.
or that Mateus Nunes, he's a bit of a Rolls Royce. I haven't heard it yet still. I was like, oh my God. I'm like, I get so cringed out because I say things like this as well sometimes.
I dread to think, because, you know, I think all those things, I must say them on a bi-weekly basis.
Mm-hmm.
So I do fear for it.
That does piss me off. Has VAR checks that? Checks everything, mate. Fucking every time. Doesn't always get the right answer, but he does checks it. That does annoy me. It's people not understanding the rules that they then preach about. That pisses me off.
Mine are, and these might be more football Twitter related, unpopular opinion, but when either
that's up there with other things,
it isn't an unpopular opinion, or it is an incredibly bad one.
It's a bad take.
Or the other one, again, it's more football Twitter, I feel, but I've gone down with it. If you know, you know. So it'd be like, I know. Wolves versus Newcastle, New Year's Day. If you know, you know.
Yeah.
But it's like, all right.
It's a bit weird, isn't it?
It's just a bit braggy. I initially read that a phrase I don't like in general, and I think for what I don't like, and it's a workplace one, and I'm now starting this thinking there might be potential people I work with who listen to this. But people always just say, I'm just so busy. I haven't been able to do that, I'm just so busy.
Mm.
It's like, all you're doing is complaining about being busy.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm with you on that one.
That's a sticking point for me, I've decided. But yeah, there's some very good... I think a number of people in the Fancast Paris listen to the Football Clichés podcast, and, you know, like saying For My Sins, they do a big, big roundup on that. And fuck me, I think any time I talk about supporting Wolves, I will say For My Sins.
Yeah, 100%.
I almost do it now, knowing how bad a saying it is. Like, I think I've gone like 180 on it. I'm saying it now, knowing that it's a shit thing to say.
What I'm trying to do, and I probably don't quite say it enough to enough proper football. Oh, that's it. I think proper football fans. There we go. That can be my irritating football phrase. I guess football nerds who listen to a Football Clichés podcast, but if I said For My Sins, half ironically like you, Andy, they pick up on the half irony of it and go, yeah, he's a cool guy who listens to podcasts. which is exactly what they mean. On that note, we will end the show. Big thank you to everyone who's listening. A big thanks to everyone who's tuned in live and hopefully enjoyed a bit of catharsis. Also, big thank you to everyone who has subscribed, because we have now hit the 2,000 mark on YouTube in terms of subscribers. I don't quite know how we've done it. I don't quite know why you persist with us sometimes, but, you know, we enjoy it. Yeah. If you want to listen to 72 minutes of top-notch content, then, you know, who am I to judge? But yeah, genuinely, it means a lot. Frankly, I've been doing this show since we had a lot lower engagement to a degree. So, you know, frankly, anyone who listens still makes me feel very humble. So big shout out to everyone, and if you haven't already subscribed, do subscribe, because you'll miss out, otherwise you might miss out on some fantastic stuff. Make sure you do keep up to date with all things Wolves Fancast at Wolves Fancast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and also YouTube. We'll probably be off in the next couple of weeks. Might stick in a filler show if we feel like it, but we'll no doubt keep you up to date on all our socials, and shout out to 90 Min as well. But until next time, it's goodbye from Jeffo.
Good night.
It's goodbye from Andy.
See you later.
And it's goodbye from me. See you next time.